Happy April and welcome to Video Nasties. My name is Maxwell Haddad. Thank you for listening. After yesterday's very long episode, extended episode, this will probably be a shorter episode. I don't even know that I have much to talk about. I kind of want to just get us started here, get the ball rolling, and then I'll probably end up recording more later. So last night I watched a movie called Livid, which is directed by Alexander Bastillo and Julian Mori, I believe are their names. They're like a writing directing team, and they're responsible for the movie Inside, which is one of the more well-known new French extremism movies, released in 2007. It made a big splash. It was very gory, very intense, and it is, in my opinion, one of the better new French extremism movies. I love Inside. And I wouldn't say I loved Livid, but I was impressed by it. I think it's better than Inside in a lot of ways. I think it's bigger, more ambitious. I think it was a step forward for them. It was also 5 years later, I believe. It was released in 2012. Might have been 2011, so it could have been 4 years, but I think it was 2012. And so it stars this chick, and she's like a really hot French chick, and then so I was definitely distracted by her hotness, but I was also like, she could be like 15, so this could be really gross. I don't think she actually was. The character might have been, but I'm not really sure. Anyway, I went back and forth between thinking she was hot and thinking she looked too young and thinking she kind of looked like a boy. Anyway, she's a good actress. She has a really interesting face, like a very, very strong angular jawline, kind of a masculine jawline. But she's very pretty, and she has, like, these crazy two different colored eyes in the movie. I assume they're contacts. I assume those aren't her real eyes. So, it was just really interesting the way it was shot. It's really beautiful. Really a beautiful horror film, and a really interesting, unusual horror film. So, watch out, spoilers. So, this is a French film. They're a French filmmaking duo. They also made Leatherface, which I think is maybe known as one of the better Texas Chainsaw Massacre sequels. It's actually a prequel, technically. And then they made a movie called The Deep House, I think recently, which is on Hulu. I'll probably watch that soon. Yeah, I like these guys. They're really dope. And I like that they kept going. It wasn't just the novelty of Inside. Like, they really kept making interesting movies. And this is definitely an interesting movie. And like I said, definitely a step forward and a step up, I think, in a lot of ways, from Inside. And Inside, you know, it's a very contained film, which is part, that's like one of the themes of the movie, is containment, but it basically all takes place in a house, and part of that, I'm sure, was budgetary restrictions, but it's just, it's a great film, very creative, very intense, gory. Livid is a little different, it's a little more elegant, kind of reminded me more of like an old school kind of like ghost story, haunted house movie, almost like The Haunting or like The Innocents, like that kind of vibe, kind of a Crimson Peak kind of vibe. The story is really interesting. The screenplay is really interesting. It starts out with this hot girl and she's with this creepy older lady and they're going around and they're, I guess it's her new job. She's some kind of, not a caretaker, but well, would you call it a caretaker? Yeah, she, like, helps out elderly people, basically. So they're doing the rounds. The old lady is kind of, or the old, no, she's not old, but the older lady is showing her the ropes. And they're taking care of actual old people. So at one point they go to this, this kind of mansion, this secluded mansion, which is gated. And she has to wait in the car, the hot girl, and then the older woman goes inside. And then she ends up going in. And it's all very kind of suspenseful and kind of slow burn and really shot in an elegant way. I wish some of the shots played out longer. It was a little choppy for me. The editing was a little choppy for me because some of the shots really were beautiful and nice to look at. And I wanted to, there's this one shot where she's walking down this pathway. It almost, I almost got like fantasy kind of vibes from it. Almost like borderline Ridley Scott legend kind of vibes. Definitely not that level of like crazy surrealism, but you know, much more realistic and grounded, but it's, you know, it's just her walking down, like, a garden path, but it looks, I don't know, it just looks really cool, the way they shot it, really beautiful movie, actually, Not shot on film, though, I don't think. Probably shot digitally, but still beautiful to look at. Still elegant filmmaking. And, yeah, like I said, really a beautiful film. So, she's walking down this pathway, right? And the leaves are kind of falling around her, and she ends up in the house, and then she ends up in the room with the old lady, who later you see she has this, like, gas mask on, and they get this key from her, and they break into this room where there's supposed to be this hidden treasure. Anyway, she's not supposed to be in there. She's with the lady. Oh, yeah, she gives this guy a shot at the beginning, and the older lady's like, don't crack the needle in the arm, break the needle off in the arm. And I was like, ugh, I cringed, because I hate needle stuff. Anyway, so she goes back to her friends, and she tells them about this house, and somehow she knows about this hidden treasure that's supposedly in the house that, you know, belonging to the old lady or something. Maybe the lady tells her, the older lady. And speaking of the older lady, there's this kind of, and I don't know how this is going to tie into the rest of the movie, and I'm curious. I fell asleep, so I didn't finish the movie, so I don't know how this ties in, but there's this scene where there's this cute girl, I don't know, 10-year-old maybe, girl on a bicycle, right? And she's got these kind of bobby socks on, and she's just riding down the road. Again, elegant filmmaking, the way this is all shot. And then this creepy older lady, she's alone in the car now, and it's weird the way they cut it. At first I thought the other girl was in the car, but then it turns out she wasn't, I guess. So this older lady kind of pulls right up on this young girl. The girl kind of looks, there's kind of like this freeze frame, it's shot almost like kind of 70s style, and then it cuts to something else. I think it's the hot girl with her friends, and then it cuts back to this older lady in a bathroom, her bathroom, I guess, in her apartment, I don't know. And as we get closer, we see blood in the tub, and then we see the dead little girl in the bathtub. It's really fucked up. And then later we see these little girls who I guess turn out to be dead ballerinas, and they slit one of the guy's throats, spoiler. So that's one down. So it does have that kind of slasher element, but then there's a flashback to the ballerinas, and it's kind of a ghost story. And then it is really genuinely creepy, when they find this corpse of this little girl down in the basement when they're looking for the treasure. And it's, yeah, that's all I'll say about that. But, yeah, so there's definitely this theme of older women killing young girls or younger girls, either literally or figuratively. Somehow the ballerina thing ties in. I guess the woman owned a ballet school or was a ballet teacher. I don't know if the school was in this kind of like a state where she lives. But anyway, she's bedridden. She's got a fucking like gas mask on. I love kind of the whole just design and look of the movie. It's really cool. Really creepy. There's like this creepy like tea party scene where it's like these figures sitting around a table, but they have these animal heads. They're like these dolls with these animal heads, but then they like turn on their own. Really fucking creepy. So, and then there's also a shot at the beginning where you see that the girl, the hot girl, her mother is dead, I guess, killed herself, and then you see, like, her ghost in one shot, and the girl, the teenage girl, is, like, looking at her mother, and then I thought the older woman as a young woman was played by Beatrice Dahl as well, the ballet teacher, but I'm not sure, so I don't know, I'm confused, and it's, like, playing these psychological games. This movie's kind of crazy. It's an unusual horror film. And really, really kind of interesting, and I recommend checking it out. It's on Shudder. I kind of want to check out the Shudder schedule and see what else they have lined up for the month. Arrow has some dope stuff lined up. I am going to spoil tomorrow night's episode. It is going to be, I mean, I'm, you know, in all likelihood, I'm 99% sure, it is going to be one of the two Fernando de Leo movies that have newly arrived on the Arrow streaming app that I have not seen. There's a collection with, I think 6 or 7 movies, and I've seen most of them, but then there are like 2 that I haven't seen, and I love Fernando de Leo. He's actually one of my favorite Italian directors, easily, of that era. He's probably just one of my favorite directors ever. One of my favorite Italian directors ever, definitely. So that's Fernando de Leo. That's a little preview of tomorrow night's episode. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about on today's episode was Army of Darkness, which is available on HBO Max apparently Evil Dead 2 is still available on there, too, as well. Maybe it's gone by now, I don't know. But Army of Darkness was on there early this morning. My cat woke me up, I was up with him, smoking a little weed, playing with him. And then I was watching Army of Darkness. And this movie is fucking dope. I haven't seen it in years. But maybe the best, like, suit-up, gear-up scene ever with the crash zooms. Those are the best crash zooms ever. It's just, like, this perfect scene. They just got it perfect. Where they basically build that hand, that mechanical hand that he uses. And then he, like, crushes the goblet with it. It's just so fucking cool. Yeah, I love that movie. And there is blood in it. There's, like, that gushing blood. And when he chops off the head, you see some blood. Anyway, but it is the least gory of the three, and it's the least horror, the most comedic of the three Evil Dead movies. And it's, yeah, just a great movie. So this is Army of Darkness. It's part three in the Evil Dead trilogy, the original Evil Dead trilogy. So the Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, also known as Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn, and then Army of Darkness. So in this one, at the end of Evil Dead 2, Ash is transported into the past, into medieval times. And that's where this movie takes place. There's a brief kind of recap of the previous movies with Bridget Fonda playing his girlfriend in this one, which I think is great. It's amazing to see Bridget Fonda do that shot and do that scream where the camera crashes through the window and basically, like, goes into her mouth screaming. And I think she does the best scream of all the girls. She has the best scream of all the Evil Dead girls. And it's awesome that that Bridget Fonda is an Evil Dead girl. I forgot about that. So, okay, so Ash is in medieval times, and he's there, and he's enslaved at first, but then he's able to defeat this demon, and he gets his boomstick somehow, which is, I don't think he's ever explained how he gets his boomstick, but, yeah, so they come to respect him, and they come to help him, and then the one-liners start dropping at one point. And my favorite one-liners of all time are Army of Darkness, Bruce Campbell, both his delivery and the writing, like the one-liners themselves. They're just great, and they're just kind of like nonstop after a certain point. Well, maybe not nonstop, actually, but a lot of great one-liners in this movie. This is my favorite one-liner movie of all time. And also, one of the best sequences in any Evil Dead movie is the Ash alone sequence. So when he kind of, like, rides off to go, I forget what he's doing. He's trying to find the Necronomicon or something, and then he's going to say the words, and that's going to banish the evil or something, and then he fucks it up, and he raises an army of the dead or something like that. I forget. Like I said, it's been years since I watched it, and I was stoned, and I was out of it early this morning, so I forget what his actual, like, mission is, his quest, but he ends up in this windmill, and it's so creative and cool and amazing what happens. His mind starts playing tricks on him, also the evil the force is playing tricks on him, and there's a bit with a shattered mirror where little ashes come up out of the shards of glass and attack him, and then he grows like a head on his shoulder, and then that grows into another ash, an evil ash, which he then shoots, but then the evil ash comes back at the end in command of the Army of the Dead or something. It's just a crazy fucking movie and so creative and amazing, like all the Evil Dead movies, but this one does have a unique flavor, and it is different. I would say Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2 are kind of closely related. Evil Dead 2 is actually sort of like a remake of Evil Dead, but then Army of Darkness is something different. It's definitely not a remake of Evil Dead. So even though it's my least favorite of the three, just because the first two are so amazing, they're just like two of my favorite movies of all time, even still, this is a masterpiece in its own way and a great movie. And watch Army of Darkness if you've never seen it, starring Bruce Campbell from, I believe, 1993. Also features the actress who plays Mrs. Honey in Matilda. I'm fairly certain it's her, and she's great in it. She's the one who he says my favorite one-liner to, in the whole movie. Probably my favorite one-liner of all time. Give me some sugar, baby. Okay, so just a few more things before I sign off. Number one, I'm pretty sure I already mentioned this and talked about this, but I may or may not check the Shudder schedule. Yes, today is April 1st, Friday, 2022. It's almost 11:22 a.m. And I may or I may not check the Shudder schedule for this month, the Shudder streaming schedule. Sorry, I just took a hit, so I'm like really fucking high. It's that LA Kush cake, baby. So I may check it because I want to know what's coming up, but I may not check it because I like to be surprised. So I don't know. I'll see what happens there. I already checked the Arrow schedule and it's looking stacked. And like I said, I'll in all likelihood be watching some Fernando De Leo tonight. So there's that. The other thing is the new Red Hot Chili Peppers album dropped today. It's called Unlimited Love. And I think the album's okay. I would say it's hit and miss. Or I guess hit or miss. I think some of the songs are good and some of the songs are not so good. Nothing on the album is terrible per se, but it's just some things are just like, ooh, yeah, that's a misstep, or ooh, you know, that doesn't sound good. Like some stuff on the album just doesn't sound good. Some of the melodies are just kind of off, and yeah, some of the songs just don't really work. But then some of them do work. Some of them are good. I would say, number one, my biggest problem with the album is it's way too long. It's an hour and 13 minutes. It's 17 songs. I think each song is at least 3 minutes. I think most of them are 4 minutes or longer. It's just way too long. I do like the way it's paced. I think Not the One probably should have come later. That's kind of like a ballad. I think the earlier songs are better. Here Ever After is one of the better, like, recent Red Hot Chili Peppers songs. I liked Aquatic Mouth Dance. That's my favorite song title on the album. I definitely prefer, as on any Red Hot Chili Peppers album, I definitely prefer the funkier stuff, with the exception maybe of By the Way. Well, even By the Way, but that had more kind of, I don't know, that was like a different era for them. this album feels like a culmination in a lot of ways of really all their albums, I guess. We do see them reuniting with John Frusciante and Rick Rubin. John Frusciante is their secret weapon, and Rick Rubin is kind of their other secret weapon. So, I mean, the album sounds good. It's well produced. It's one of the better recent Chili Peppers albums. There was one song that really sounded like Stadium Arcadium to me. Other songs sounded like different albums. I'll just read you the description on Apple Music. They go through a few of the songs. Maybe I won't get into that, but I'll just read the actual description part. So this is from Apple Music, and this is their description of Unlimited Love, the new album, just dropped today, April 1st, 2022, from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Quote, "One more time, for whatever reason, the universe saw fit to inject this band with another giant shot of plasma," Red Hot Chili Peppers frontman Anthony Kiedis tells Apple Music. I like Kiedis' lyrics on this album, by the way. I've always liked his lyrics. And he gets into, like, some pretty serious, like, rapping on one of the songs. Yeah, he's, like, actually rapping on one of the songs. So, yeah, I like, he seems like he's kind of back in top form in terms of his lyrics. Maybe not top form, but it's definitely more like old school Kiedis in a good way. "Left to our own devices, we probably would have withered on the vine somewhere along the line, as we all do at some point, but it wasn't quite time for us to do that yet." The shot of plasma that Kiedis is referring to is, in large part, the second return of guitarist John Frusciante after roughly a decade away. So I guess the first return would have been Stadium Arcadium. "You can immediately hear the difference in the aqueous, I don't know how to say that word, aqueous funk of Poster Child, the stadium-ready swings of These Are the Ways, or the acoustic phrasing of Tangelo, the album's delicate closer." I thought Tangelo wasn't bad, I just listened to it. Kind of reminded me of Road Trippin', the last song on Californication, which is my favorite Red Hot Chili Peppers album. It isn't half the song Road Trippin' is, though. Quote, "It's so clear when he writes and when he plays," Kida says of his bandmate, whose guitar work proved galvanizing on career highlights like 1991's Blood Sugar Sex Magik and 1999's Californication. "It's really fun to listen to because it's sound and emotion and color. He's not trying to play the right notes. He's just trying to play the notes that are truly him." Yeah, Frusciante has a real sound. I think he's a brilliant guitar player. And there's definitely a Frusciante tone that is recognizable and can be heard on this album. Quote, also back in the fold, producer and honorary fifth Chili Pepper, Rick Rubin, who, absent on 2016's The Getaway, which I have not heard, accompanied Kiedis to Kaui? I believe that's in Hawaii, for a songwriting retreat that was unexpectedly extended by lockdown. Quote, "Nobody could come, nobody could leave," Kida says. "It was 6 months of being in the land that time forgot. For the five of them, the aim was simple. Be together, play together, and in Kida's words, write and write and write and write. Maybe we'll keep all of it, maybe we'll keep some of it. The process that it had to go through to become this record was very democratic in the sense that we all voted, including Rick. The result is 17 songs that pay tribute to the veteran outfit's chemistry and affection for one another, a magnetic coming together that's apparent anytime they play. We're older and different, and enter unlimited love, a really fun and wild experience," Kida says. "We accept each other, and we love each other, and there is an endless friendship going on there. Which is not to say that we want to hang out every day. It's nice to go away from it and come back to it. Go away from it and come back. But it never dies. Here, Kiedis takes us inside a few highlights from the album." Okay, I'm not going to get into that. You can read that if you have Apple Music. Check it out. So that's really it for this episode. It was a really kind of cloudy gray day, a cloudy gray morning, but now the clouds are parting. Looks like the sun might be coming out. I'm chilling in my car studio. I'm gonna smoke a little more weed and yeah, that's pretty much it for me for the day. I'm pretty much done. But I hope you have a good Friday. I hope you have a good April 1st. It is my birthday month. This is the month that I turned 32, which is painful to even say. But I'm happy to be on here talking to you fine people. And I'll talk to you soon. Thank you for listening. Happy April. Peace. Okay, so I just want to give a quick shout out first to the two books that I'm reading. Only Americans Burn in Hell by Jarrett Kobeck and Dune by Frank Herbert. And then I also want to shout out the other album I'm listening to today, which is Gold by Alabaster de Plume. This is an album that I just started listening to. It also just came out today, if I'm not mistaken. And it is a crazy album. It's listed as singer-songwriter on Apple Music, which I would not say is accurate. Although I guess it's kind of accurate. It kind of reminds me of Devendra Banhart at times. But I would say it's more kind of jazz, experimental, spoken word. It's interesting. I think jazz is kind of enjoying a renaissance right now. So check out Gold. And thank you for listening. Peace. Okay, so when I said that jazz is enjoying a renaissance right now, I'm basically talking about albums like the Nalis and Ephro album from last year, that Floating Points album that he did with the London Symphony Orchestra, I think, and also this album here, which is, Alabaster de Plume. So I've never heard of this guy before. I don't know much about him. He's British, from the sound of it. And I discovered it on Pitchfork. Big surprise. BNM, Best New Music, 8.4, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, which is really good. That's getting into the realm of really good. Like, you should probably listen to this right now. So that's what I'm doing. And I'm also listening to the new Red Scare episode.
Oh, which by the way, I don't know if I mentioned, I think I did talk about this, but I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure. When I talked about The Scary of 61st, which is the Dasha Nekrasova movie, which is still available on Shudder. I recommend it. Shot on 16 millimeter. Kind of a cool movie. Probably one of the better movies that I've seen by a millennial. Certainly recently, maybe ever. It just has this interesting style shift at the end. So check it out if you haven't watched it. But yeah, so I did kind of a review of it on the podcast. I forget which episode it was. And I went into her podcast, Red Scare, which she has with Anna Kachin. I believe I talked about Red Scare, but I'm not sure how far into it I got. So I just want to mention, and I apologize if I have talked about this before, if I have mentioned it before, but I just want to mention the one episode that they did with Steve Bannon, which pissed me off to the point that I stopped listening to Red Scare. Now, this dude is a scumbag, 100%. Used to be a financer in Hollywood, apparently. He seemed to only speak to Dasha. I don't know whether he thought she was cute, he thought her voice was cute. I don't know if they were in the room. I don't know how it was recorded. I don't want to know. The guy was a fucking creep. He was actually talking over Anna. I don't know if it's because she's darker, she's Armenian, Dasha's blonde. This is the theory I had while I was listening to it. I could be totally off here. But I mean, he worked for the Trump campaign. Like, the guy's a fucking asshole. So, of course, he was weird. Of course, he was a creep. I listened to the episode because I am a Red Scare listener, and I figured, fuck it, I'll give it a chance. And after that, I said, you know what? You lost the listener. Like, why would you have this guy on the podcast? Why? I just like. After that Steve Bannon shit, I just couldn't listen to it anymore. And then I did go back to it, probably after the John Waters thing. Even though I still have yet to see that episode posted anywhere. I don't know how you listen to the John Waters episode of the Red Scare podcast. So anyway, that's my theory about that episode. That's why I stopped listening to the show for a while. The reason I started listening to it again was probably a combination of things. John Waters, me being bored, me looking for a podcast to listen to, also their voices being sexy. Also, Dasha made this movie, and then Eli Roth recommended it on Instagram, along with his recommendations for X and Clean, the new Paul Sollett movie. I mean, he didn't recommend them all together, but like in the last few months, he has recommended these three, like, new horror movies. And so far I've seen X and The Scary of 61st, and I liked both a lot. I enjoyed both. X I loved. The Scary of 61st I liked, so I definitely prefer X of the two. That's the one I prefer for sure, but I'm looking forward to seeing Clean if I ever get a chance to see it. I enjoyed Grace. I like that movie. That's the movie that Paul Sollett made with Jordan Ladd. And I believe I have that movie on DVD, if I'm not mistaken. I bought the DVD. I watched it once. I was kind of disappointed by it. Produced by Adam Green, who made Hatchet. Who also, speaking of racist assholes, well, no, I mean, Adam Green has never said anything racist, as far as I can remember, but he is getting weird. He is getting like kind of uber American, which is just like always kind of weird. He said something about foreign names on the new episode of The Movie Crypt, which is the podcast that he has with Joe Lynch. And I don't know, it just weirded me out, and I stopped listening and unfollowed him on Instagram. And I don't know. I mean, he is the guy that discovered Paul Sollett. I put discovered in quotes because I think they grew up together or something. They're both from here, from Massachusetts. Not from the Cape, though. Adam Green is from Holliston. I don't know where Paul Sollett is from. So anyway, that's where Where was I going with that? What was the point of that? I don't know. But those are the three movies that Eli Roth has recommended recently. So check them out. Peace.